You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media that is dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, creator and host. During this live broadcast, we invite you to jump on our chat to make comments and interact with your fellow listeners. And you can also call us direct on a toll-free number, 800-630-7858. 800-630-7858. And we look forward to your questions and comments. If you shop on Amazon, you've encountered Lee Gerdes before. After you purchase a book, you're led to a page that says, people who bought the book you just selected also enjoyed these books. That feature is based on an algorithm which was developed by Lee Gerdes in his first incarnation as a computer geek and math whiz businessman. But his own struggles to get over post-traumatic stress disorder led him on a search to find something that could help him heal, and when he didn't find something that really worked, he created something himself. That something is brain training, brain balancing, also known as brainwave optimization. Apparently, once our amazing brain discovers how it has established neural patterns that may have been necessary for our survival in the past but that limit us in the present, it readjusts itself. You can balance the lobes and hemispheres, you can stabilize your emotions, you can improve your mental acuity and advance your health and well-being. It's the most fascinating, promising-sounding help, it turns out, for all manner of everyday problems. It also can affect your spiritual development. In my local newspaper today, there's a front-page story of a woman who fatally shot her 16-year-old son and then herself because she was despondent over financial situations. In the past, I would have puzzled over what specific things could be bad enough to cause a mother to kill her own child. Having just read the cutting-edge information about brain balancing, my first reaction this time was to say, poor woman, her brain was out of balance. When our brain's out of balance, we don't act like our real selves. But new technology has been developed that can balance your brain, and we have the developer of that technology, Lee Gerdes, today with us. He's the author of Limitless You. Lee Gerdes can be found at brainstatetech.com, BRAINSTATETECH.com. He has a background as a systems analyst, a pastoral counselor, a management consultant, and vice president of solutions of Net Perceptions. And that all prepared him to become founder and CEO of Brainstate Technologies. He's done advanced studies in math and physics, holds a master's degree in divinity, has done advanced studies in psychology, and this eclectic mix of his education and his personal need to experience more happiness and less stress while still being highly functional led him to his research on how the brain could be optimized for health and happiness. Brainstate Technologies is located in Scottsdale, Arizona, and there are affiliate offices throughout the world. So, Lee Gerdes, welcome to Full Power Living.
Welcome to you. I mean, that was the most wonderful introduction I think I've ever had. Thank you very much.
Well, I really was struck by the sadness of the situation that I read this morning. In your book, Limitless You, you do a lot of work setting the stage so that the reader can understand how the brain gets trained. And as I understand it, the bottom line is that our brain can get out of balance through such things as trauma or childhood experiences or threats to our lives. And when it does, it affects our body, our behavior, and our connection to the outside, including our spiritual connection. So, will you start us off by talking a little bit about the problem or the issue that you're addressing with brainwave optimization?
Well, the issue is exactly what you've stated, and by the way, succinctly stated. It's about balance, and it's about balance from left to right and front to back within the brain. And it's it's about balance in terms of functioning. Like when I was a child and would get on the teeter-totter, there was one guy in the class that I didn't like to be on the teeter-totter with. He was quite heavy, and I could not make it. I was up in the air all the time. And then he would get off, and I would be down really quickly.
I had a big sister. I know what you're talking about.
And you know what? The brain works precisely the same way. But we have to understand, I think, and the reason that I wrote the book, is because people need to know that some of the things that we experience are simply not what they seem. And our judgment of those things, be they internal or in someone else, our judgment causes us great angst in the world and causes angst in the world. So I wrote the book to have people start to see and understand that, aha, exactly what you said this morning. I'm amazed at how quickly you picked this up, but exactly what you said. This woman who committed this crime was in great distress, and if we could see her brain now, it would be extremely imbalanced. And
yes,
let me give you some data about that, because like it or not, what I really am is a geek. You know, I'm a numbers guy. I like data, right? So I like to measure stuff because that helps me understand it and put a context to it. And that's why when I got to the point of needing to balance my own brain initially, that's how I did it. I wanted to measure things. So I measured my brain patterns when I was feeling really good. But with, as others with post-traumatic stress can tell you, there are times when you feel okay or good, and there are times when you really don't. And you don't understand the times when you don't. You just don't feel good. And it may be a number of things you feel. It may be some paranoia. It may be just some grief. It may be angst. It may be a lot of things, but you don't feel good. So I would measure my brain between these two things, and I saw very distinct pattern differences between these two things. And so then what I did was I thought, aha, you know, the first law of quantum physics is that which is observed is changed. And guess what? You already know that's true, because some point, at some time, you've walked somewhere or been somewhere, and you have felt someone looking at you. You felt that. And you look back over your shoulder or whatever, and there you saw someone looking at you. Have you ever had that experience?
Absolutely.
And so what was the cause for your resonating to that observation? Well, it was the observation itself. And so it was that I decided to try to observe the brain, but not worry about the imbalance or the static, but instead just try to continue to observe it within the area that was balanced, okay, or that created the sensation of feeling good. And so as I did that, my brain started to gravitate there, and then it stayed there, and the symptoms I had previously just disappeared. And I thought, wow, that was really cool. But if you take this to an extreme, the person becomes so distraught that it's an implosion time. For example, when we have had 14,000 clients now in 19 countries around the world in about 130 offices. So we are seeing about 250 new clients a week. And we're collecting all that data. Eileen, I can't tell you how important that is. Mm-hmm. It is teaching us something. It is teaching us incredible amounts of information every single week. But right now, when we look at that data from all of those people, and we see various pathologies manifested from those people coming to us, you know, sleep, anxiety, depression, PTSD, language issues, anger issues, concentration focus issues, some physical manifestations, restless leg, chronic fatigue, chronic pain, and many, many others. But when we see those differences in a certain lobes of the brain that are key to its being driven chemically, that we're measuring function in, we will generally see patterns which reflect anywhere from, say, a 20% differential, so if one side's 10, the other side's 12, to about 100% differential in extreme cases where one side's 10, let's say, the other side's 20, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when we went into prison and we measured and worked with inmates, and then when we also worked with people on probation, the average differential for those lobes was 450%.
Wow.
The average. We are talking about 10 on one side and 45 on the other side, and if you had that differential right now, you would be feeling as if you were going to implode. And it's very likely in that with that feeling, you would have to be separated from yourself. Does that make some sense?
Yes.
I know it's sometimes hard for people to get this part, but you're so, you are in so much discomfort and pain that you literally have to be outside yourself to exist.
That's the kind of thing that people describe when they cut or self-injure.
Precisely, exactly. And they're not nearly at 450%, mm-hmm. by the way, at least the 50 or so we've had. So what we see is that when you get so dissociated in order to survive, one of the ways to bring yourself back to a life in your body is to engage in an extreme action on the other side. And that extreme action is undoubtedly involves some kinds of violence. Mm. So when we see from criminal histories that we take people who end up in prison, in corrections, in the correctional system, so they're they have convictions of various crimes from, let's say, 18 to 23 in that age range,
mm-hmm.
we know that 65% are going to be there 80% of their life. They're going to be inside the correctional, and guess what they're going to do the other 20%? Have an escalating, yeah, exactly, but they have an escalating crime drama of increasing violence. Eileen, we have to stop this, and we can.
Well, you know, there's another aspect. I have worked in San Quentin prison and other correctional facilities, and one of the things that I observed, I did a series on anger for pre-release people.
Yeah.
And one of the things I observed was just how sweet these people were who were locked up in jail, at least when they were being supervised. And also that most of them were there because they had gotten involved with drugs. And during the time that they were involved with drugs, which was starting very early in their young lives, they had missed chunks of experience and learning, so that they were hugely dysfunctional because they didn't know how to operate in the world. And that dysfunction seemed to be, to me, to almost be impossible to fill up.
Right.
Are you familiar with that?
Yep. I mean, because what they're doing, and I know that you see it as a dysfunction, and I too would see it as a cognitive therapist, I would see it as a dysfunction, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as a scientist, I see it as a brain imbalance, as a differential between certain lobes of the brain. And when that brain imbalance is changed, that problem or that pathology simply doesn't exist. It goes away. And I can't yet explain that totally from a scientific standpoint. We've got a lot more research to do, but we're certainly getting there. We were published in a couple scientific journals, neuroscientific journals this year. We've got a lot more research to do, but we're starting on that path. And it's a very exciting thing.
Yes. Well, now, as I was reading Limitless You, I recalled a few years ago I was visiting with my daughter and son-in-law, and my son-in-law has a PhD in electrical engineering, and he was working on a noise cancellation system for private jets, and he showed me how it worked. He essentially took the same noise that the jet was making and fed it back into the area of the jet so that it canceled the noise. And when I was reading Limitless You, it seemed that that's a lot of what this technology is like. It's a similar kind of thing, except you call it mirroring.
That's a very interesting analogy. And we do, because what we're doing is basically we're showing the brain itself, but what that physically does scientifically and what he is scientifically doing are very similar.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It just was like, oh, I understand this now.
Yeah, it's very similar, and I've never heard that analogy. Thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
I didn't know you were a scientist. Eileen, you're impressing me.
I'm a therapist, and I should warn you ahead of time, I'm also married to a neurosurgeon, so...
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. So, well, he's gonna love it. I mean, we're working with five different neuroscience and areas in five different universities now. So he'll kind of find this of interest.
Yes.
We're able to measure function much different than, say, a neurosurgeon would be dealing a lot with tumors and breakdowns for, aneurysms, et cetera.
Right.
But we're dealing with function, and we can measure function, and we're starting to be able to measure it in quite significant detail. Go ahead.
No, I want you to finish, please.
So things like an MRI and fMRI and PET and CAT and SPECT, all these are measuring how glucose and other things are being utilized in the brain. But what we're measuring is how the brain is functioning. So we're measuring the energy function of each area of the brain, and we're measuring it to some significant detail, to the nearest thousandth of a hertz now.
Mm-hmm.
So when we view the brain, we have sensors that sit on the scalp, and those sensors then have computer chips in them that we've developed. And the computer chip and the sensor sees the brain pattern, passes it to an amplifier because the function is so small we have to magnify it in order to see it, even digitally in a computer. So we do that in the amplifier. Then that shows on the screen or plays back to the person via sound. But when we see this, we are sampling the brain pattern at 256 times every second. And every one of those samples bring us back 65,000 bits of information.
And then at the end of the day, you put them together, don't you, from all over the world?
Yes. And then at the end of the day, we take all of it and put it together with all of the rest of it that we have, and then we keep developing information or hone our algorithms all the time. So we're starting already to see, for instance, differences in regions and cultures, which is very interesting. So when we get in 5 years or so, we'll be able to see some very distinct differences in cultures, and so we'll be able to inform those cultures how best to work with other cultures, because their brain patterns are inherently different.
So, as we put the materials out announcing the show, Lee, some people got back to us and they were very distressed, and I want to bring this out. They were raising questions about the fact that what you're offering isn't doctor supervised, It's not sufficiently tested in double-blind experiments, and it may offer false hope for people with severe emotional problems like bipolar disorder. And I want to know what your response to such concerns is.
Well, first of all, what we're saying is we're on a learning journey currently, and so some of those concerns are correct. And if somebody needs a double-blind study to feel comfortable with the modality, then they should definitely not do this. If someone needs a doctor's prescription to to work in this area, to work in on something that they have, then they should definitely not do this. And their heart should guide them as well as their head. But as we say those things, let's be very, very clear, shall we, about what we're talking about. For instance, scientifically, when we look at, for example, let's take one anything, but let's take depression. If we look at how antidepressants are measured in terms of a double-blind study, there is very little difference between what the antidepressant did and what the placebo did. Okay, there's very little difference. And secondly, in the placebo group, there was not nearly the negative reactions that we saw in the, and I don't care which one you choose, any of them. There's not nearly the negative consequences of the prescribing for the antidepressant itself. So, are we kidding each other? This is just ridiculous. We have a system now in place to try not to do harm, and I know that, and we have the best one possible. But to say it's good and valuable and it's the only one that we should follow is ridiculous. It's just not scientific reality. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we only have 14,000 clients. We have a success rate of over 85% for mitigating over 60% of the pathologies brought to us. What we advertise is that we do relaxation and self-regulation. That's what we advertise, and therefore you could get that done anywhere for in a lots of different modalities. You can go after that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when we do that, we understand what happens in a brain balance situation is that the balancing doesn't help the person helps the person. In other words, when the balance is attained, they have an opportunity to heal themselves effectively. And that's what we think is happening. We don't think there's anything that we do to have any aspect of healing per se. We think instead that what we do is help that person gain balance, and the common language now is neuroplasticity. And in that aspect of life, therefore, they heal themselves.
Thank you.
Medical science has a lot of trouble with this, and the reason is because they have a lot of trouble with self-healing. But there are some superior examples of self-healing studies that have gone on with meditation, for example. I mean, they've been incredibly successful. The problem with the studies is this, Eileen. If you take 100 people, and they've done this in various correctional facilities, they've taken 100 people, they try to get them into a meditative state in order to heal their self emotionally, or heal, you know, with anger issues, let's say, or to heal themselves with anxiety issues, what a depression. Well, you take 100 people, and the problem is that you can get very few of them to a true meditative state. But those you can get to a meditative state, oh my, they have a tremendous success rate. The problem isn't that meditation isn't valuable and self-healing isn't valuable. Probably what you do as a therapist is help people to self-heal, right?
Yes.
I mean, don't you reflect them so that they can see themselves, so that they could heal themselves?
Yes, and I do it in some similar ways to what you describe, not ways, but similar attitudes to what you put in your book. This is really fascinating, but we're past our time for a break. So,
oh, sorry.
I wonder if we can continue with this, and I'd like you to go into more about emotional balance and how brain training in your observation has affected that when we get back.
Okay.
We've been talking with Lee Geertes, who is at brainstatetech.com. He's from Brainstate Technologies, and he has a system for training the brain that he discusses in his book, Limitless You. You're listening to Full Power Living at emotionalpro.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon. Are you a marriage counselor, coach, psychologist, social worker, or other psychotherapist who dreads having angry clients dump on you? Most therapists studying to qualify for licensure are not taught even the basics about anger, like what is the root cause of anger, why years of psychotherapy may not relieve angry clients, and the real reason we have emotions. If you're ready to master anger instead of merely manage it, and help your clients to master anger too, go to www.emotionalpro.com to sign up for a free mini course, Master Don't Just Manage Anger. Check out our store for downloadable ebooks like Bouncing Back from Anger and Argument, and register for our 10-week teleseminar, Anger Mastery for Psychotherapists. Become an anger master and teach your clients to be anger masters too. Go to www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com.
We're back on Full Power Living talking with Lee Geertes of Brainstate Technologies, brainstatetech.com, about a system for training the brain that he discusses in his book, Limitless You. And I know that copies of Limitless You are obtainable on Amazon because I ordered them from there, and I assume also major book outlet sites. Is that correct, Lee?
Correct, yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So interesting, our advertisement there has to do with emotions. Did you finish your statement from before? Is there anything left over that you wanted to finish?
Well, it's not that we don't have data to support what we do. I mean, we have enormous amounts of data, probably 500% more than almost any clinical study would have. But it's simply that it is very difficult to trick the brain. In other words, you can't set up a placebo for the brain. It knows right away. The person will know after only a few minutes that there's nothing going on here if you try to do that. And so to set up a placebo, even though we're going to try, by the way, we're trying to engineer that. We're trying to engineer it and work with the State of Nevada Department of Corrections, with U.S. Justice Department, and with the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. We're going to try to set up 100 trained people, inmates, and 100 who used a placebo, and then measure their recidivism over the next 12 months, because 65% of those 18 to 25 go back into prison within 12 months currently, to see what we could do. So it's not that we don't have data. It's that some of the data isn't presented in a way that the scientific community has presented it before. But again, it's with the brain, and it's not that easy to do. But we're getting there. We're getting there. So I respect those people who call that out and say that we're going towards that side, but we also have a lot of information right now. Just to give you one example, only within the last 2 months, we've seen patterns of a few hundred clients from this 14,000 who are postmenopausal, have thermal control issues, hot flashing, and have sleep issues. And there's some very distinct patterns in those three things. And so when we train those patterns to be sure those areas are balanced, guess what happens? They don't have sleep issues. They don't have hot flashing. I mean,
I'm going to put my sister in contact with you.
It's not that we're trying to do anything with those things. It's that this is just coming out of the data. The data is informing us. We're not informing the data, and we're not trying to heal or cure anything. We're just trying to bring a balance to the brain. So when we talk about doing that, particularly with what you do in terms of your anger cessation or cure, I forgot the language, but
I use mastery.
Okay, mastery. You know, we're looking at different kinds of anger. Can I talk to you about that in terms of the brain for a minute?
Exactly, I was going to ask you about it. So fine.
You know, when you do your mastery work, what you're helping people do, we've all developed automatic functioning patterns. And by automatic functioning patterns, I mean if you put your, you know, hand and your foot on one side in the air, you move both of them in a clockwise way. So if you took your right hand and your right foot, you lifted them both up, you try to move them both in a clockwise way, they would move. But then when you moved your hand in a counterclockwise way only, your foot would move with it. Why? Well, because you've developed an automatic function. When you grew and you started leaning one way and your hand went that way towards the right, your right foot would go towards the right. You see what I mean?
Yes.
When you move your lean towards the left, your hand would go towards the left, your foot would go towards the left. They would move and go in the same direction. So, in other words, you've developed an automatic function. People develop automatic functions, and those automatic functions need a way to be reprogrammed, and you've found that way. And, you know, you've helped people to be going into the mastery of all that. That doesn't mean that they don't still feel the anger. It means that they can master the automatic function. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I you know, saw some parallels. My car license says EMOTBAL because balance is what I've been after, and I'm the recovering mm-hmm. angry person, just like you had to work on your PTSD. And what I have found with myself is that as I created new neural pathways, and also changed the beliefs that I held that are the occasion for the anger, that I actually encounter less anger.
Yep. And I bet you when you do, you're still able to handle it better.
Yes.
Much, much better.
And that's what I call mastery, and why I don't like management so much, because that suggests that you can't change the neural pathways, and I think you can.
Yep. And so I do too. And I think you've found a way to do that. But imagine, if you will, if that anger initially is about an imbalance. That's my contention.
Yes.
And if you can bring that into balance, and then on the top of that have an opportunity to develop, because none of us are going to live without anger, right?
Right.
I mean, we can't. I mean,
it's part of us, yes.
Yeah, unless we're rocks, we have emotions. You know?
Just assume. We don't know about the rocks, actually.
Yeah, right. So we're going to have some, but what you've helped people to do is find processes to master it. Now, if you can dissuade the source from erupting so readily, then you can also then work to reprogram it via that mastery much quicker and much more deeply. This isn't a replacement for what you do at all, but instead is a supporting tool for what you do.
Yeah, that was very, very exciting for me and made me want to rush right out and take the training. Thank you for that explanation. We have a few questions from our listeners. One is, how do you see the role of nutrition with proper brain functioning? To this person, it seems like our junk food society can't be what the brain is looking for proper functioning. Do you have any information about junk food in the brain?
Well, there's a couple of things that we have to understand. I guess one of the things is that we have environmental issues, and one of the environmental issues that we face is junk food. That is, it's in our environment. That's the environment we live in. How much we do it is the question, right? To me, It's not that I'm not going to go get a double cheeseburger. I guarantee you, I am. But I'm not going to do it very often. And the reason is because I don't feel I need to very often. So I'm answering this question from the back door, and then I'll go in the front if I may. So if you can change the brain to dissuade the need to have the junk food, you've gotten partway home right there. But just like we talked about anger, if you don't then come in the front door with healthy food and healthy lifestyle, then guess what's going to happen? Over time, you're going to, if you let yourself be bent to the environment, over time, you're going to go back probably. So I think it's hugely important that a person is on a healthy regime of everything my mom told me. You know, my mom's, by the way, 99, still lives in her own and takes care of her own home.
Wow.
And still tells me what to do, I mean, by the way.
She's just trying to keep you balanced.
Yeah, that's what she says. Words from her own mouth. But we do know that we lack a lot of things in our diet, especially in Americanized culture. And a healthy diet is tremendously important. So is exercise. I mean, you can't stress it enough. It's tremendously important. I just had a doctor who wrote to Oprah about how important the brain balance was for her because it solved for her a compulsive eating disorder that she's had for, 50 plus years. And how happy she was. And how happy the other docs in her that were colleagues of hers were that she did get brain balancing, because she was so much nicer to live with. But
now I am going to tell my husband about this.
but the fact is that diet is really important, and we encourage diet, but understand that we're a technology company, and we're gathering brain patterns, we're measuring those patterns, and we're putting out protocol or means to help those patterns become more and more balanced, and that's what we do. So people would have to take and license us, our technology, and then put our technology and make our technology part of their modality, be it whatever their modality is. A therapeutic setting of some kind, certainly a naturopathic doc or a dietitian of some kind, even weight management. We have some of the top female bodybuilders in the United States who train their brain in order to build their body more soundly.
Wow. Well, we've come up to a second break. We're talking with Lee Gerdes of Brain State Technologies about brain training, and you can find out more about it at his website, brainstatetech.com, and also I really encourage you to read Limitless You. I've been excited all week as I've been reading it. And we're going to take our break and come on back here to Full Power Living, and we'll have more for you right here on EmotionalPro.com. Thank you.
listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
You and everyone you know have been born to learn. All humans are on Earth to attend school. People know this intuitively, but they don't really live by it. And now you can. I'm Eileen Dillon. Born to Learn is the title of my latest book, available at emotionalpro.com. The result of 30 years of investigation, which gives you the big picture and the instruction book. Born to Learn gives you information you need to turn your problems into puzzles and then solve them. Life is kinder when we complete our homework assignments. Start today. Order Born to Learn at emotionalpro.com and get a leg up on your life.
So, welcome back to Full Power Living. Go to iTunes and subscribe to receive Full Power Living shows. Just enter my name, Eileen Dillon, I-L-E-N-E-D-I-L-L-O-N, to find them. Next week, the nuts and bolts of spirituality man, Richard Blackstone, is talking with us about his blueprint for manifesting. In August, we've got emotions and sports, including a visit with Pam Carey, the mother of two sons who played baseball in the minor leagues, and another show with football's number two draft choice in 1989, Tony Mandarich. We will also be talking with Grant Hallstrom about emotional black holes, and with Lorraine Cohen and Anita Law about money alignment. So join us in the coming weeks. We're talking now with Lee Gerdes of Brain State Technologies, brainstatetech.com, about his book Limitless You and Brain Optimization. Lee, let me go to one of the questions that a guest has. Would a head injury from a fall, a fractured skull acquired before the age of two, have any influence on traumas experienced that brought about the PTSD? That's the question.
It's not. I have no way of measuring. I have no way of measuring to say that they would not create a pathology later. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. In other words, if that happened to someone and they didn't come to us, I would have no way of discerning that. But I can tell you that we have dozens, no, that's not true. We have hundreds of clients who in fact have come to us because of TB, traumatic brain injury of some kind, when at a very young age. And sometimes even that happens because of a traumatic brain injury from a accident the mother had in, let's say, the last trimester. A car accident or a fall or, you know, a very severe emotional traumatic event.
Now that pushes the parasympathetic system to be the predominant pattern. Is that correct if something like that happens?
I would have to see the brain pattern in order to know that exactly, but the likelihood is that you're correct, but it depends on the trauma. For example, in an accident, such as a fall, that's more of an infringement sometimes, even as an infant, than it is, and so which would encourage a fight or flight response versus a freeze response on the parasympathetic side. So it's likely that a fall might yield extremities in digestion, extremes in digestion, blood rushing to extremities a lot, lack of sleeplessness, variable blood pressure, sometimes going high, and or heart arrhythmias. All those things can be part of a sympathetic dominance. But we wouldn't know that. We would just have to measure the brain pattern to be able to see, you know, do an assessment on the brain to see what we needed to balance. Because it, I hate to be crass, but it wouldn't matter to us. Does that make any sense? Because
yeah.
all we're trying to do is achieve the balance. And mm-hmm. then I think the person will work with their other providers, and that balance will help them move towards a way of healing themselves.
It strikes me that that approach, while I know it may be technologically or, you know, your particular approach may influence that, but it strikes me that it also reflects a tremendous respect for the power and workings of the brain itself. You expect the brain to go ahead and move toward homeostasis, do you not?
Yes, I think that's what it's there for. I think it's there to. I think that's why we have evolved as human species. That the brain has helped us do that, and by the way, it's helped us do that because it's responded to severe trauma in such a way that the person isn't going to do that again.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, when you get burnt by placing your hand on the hot wood stove as a child, it's not likely you're going to forget that. There are cultural differences, however, in teaching our children to not place their hand on that stove to pick up that trauma pattern in the first place. The Western cultural norm is to say, don't do that. In other words, to instill some fear into touching it, okay? And the Eastern cultural norm is to move the child away, you know,
mm-hmm.
from that possibility of trauma. And so the beauty of that is that in the East, in Eastern religions, we often see less mention of kinds of fear-based stuff because, you know, they're not brought up with as much fear.
That's interesting.
In the West, we have a lot more fear-based stuff. So when we look at the New Testament, for example, you know, the one admonition that's given so soundly is, thou shalt not be afraid, you know, don't fear, fear not, over and over and over. And so we have to deal with that from the West. Anyway, this is an exciting journey now that we can see these things.
Well, you know, I connected into it. I had a very, based on my 37 years as a therapist, I can say clearly that I think I had an exceptionally traumatic childhood. I lost my birth mother when I was 3. I was placed in boarding homes at the age of 3. My father was in the military. He was physically abusive. We moved from one place to the next, et cetera, et cetera. There were a lot of things that I ran into. And so it's been interesting to me that my push as an adult and becoming a therapist has been to balance myself. And as I read Limitless You and heard what balanced people were like, I was understanding, well, this is why I'm so excited about sharing what I've learned, because I've been able to get to a state of balance. And it struck me that you would be very excited, and sounds like you are in your book too, about the possibility of bringing people to a state of balance like that, if they can possibly get there.
Indeed. When you call out people and teach them, if you will, and counsel them to a state of mastery over their anger, what you're doing is you're creating pathways so that they can for lack of a better term, simply put that expression that they previously had of anger in relegate it to a smaller domain. You know, you've contained it somehow. Mm-hmm. What I do is simply try to bring about a balance so that the anger itself, or the imbalance, which anger is not there. But when it comes there, even when somebody is angry, then they have to find ways of working through it. When we went to medium security prison in Nevada, and we trained 6 inmates, the Nevada Corrections Department chose the inmates that we were going to train. Now, the way they chose those inmates is by showing a video of what brain training was, you know, a brief video, one of which we have on our website, for example, talks about brain balance, etc. They showed 35 inmates who were, quote-unquote, their bad boys. In a medium security prison, that means your next step is, right, maximum security prison, by the way. One of which they took off, one of the inmates we trained, they took off the train going to maximum security. But they showed these 35 inmates, and they said, you're not going to get anything for this, on the one hand, but we'll give you the opportunity if you want to sign up. And they figured, they hoped that they could get 6 of the 35 to sign up, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got 35 of the 35 signed up.
You betcha.
They knew inherently that they were dealing with a brain imbalance. They knew that, but they didn't know how to express it, didn't know what it meant. But as they processed through and we helped them bring their brain back into balance, one of the things that happened was their expression of anger was not anywhere like it had been. All of them had been written up for acts of violence on a weekly basis or a monthly basis, at least, all of them. In 18 months, there have been no acts of violence for many of them.
Wow.
Why? Because they are more capable now to deal with their environment. Why? Because they have more flexibility. Eileen, if I don't have any flexibility and I'm trying to deal with someone, a staff member, or trying to write an agreement with somebody, and I get to a place of being inflexible, I can almost guarantee you that it's not going to go as well.
Yes.
So if you ever meet me on the street and I seem inflexible, don't mess with me.
Let's walk by like I don't know you.
yeah. But you know what I mean. I mean, that's true with all of us. Come on. And in interpersonal relationships, when we finally get to a place after we've invested a lot with another person, when we finally get to a place of, a lot of times at least, of not being able to go on, so that relationship's going to end, what we often see is that we've reached a place where we're not, where we can't be flexible over an issue or issues anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Where that flexibility will be damaging to us in our perception or in our power. In other words, we might not be capable. But if we can be more flexible, then we're more able to be human. And we're more able to be human when we're better balanced. I mean, my mom taught me that.
And she's still going. No. and that brings me to the thing that I think we need to close out with, which is becoming more me is really getting back to who I really am. And I was so impressed how much of your book is concerned with consciousness and intuition and our spiritual selves. So can you make tell us briefly a little bit about how brain optimization goes together with consciousness and intuition and spiritual development?
I worked with two men who were both in the movie What the Bleep Do We Know? I don't know if you know that movie.
Uh-huh.
But Dr. William Tiller, emeritus from Stanford, physicist, and Dr. Gary Schwartz from University of Arizona, both of whom are great friends, by the way. We know that there is a place in the brain where when it becomes severely imbalanced, that the person loses an ability to connect first to themselves, secondly to someone else, thirdly to the creation around them, and fourthly to spirit. It's a connectedness pattern. And that connectedness pattern ultimately has to do, the lack of connectedness for one has to do with their ability to have what we call in general vernacular confidence. Because when I'm connected to myself and to those around me and to creation and to spirit, guess what I have? I have a certain surety. I'm just okay. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
Because I'm part of the whole. And Eileen, I bet you see that every day when you counsel people into mastery for anger because they can't be very connected with a lot of anger issues, right?
Absolutely. Totally true.
Don't you see that all the time? And,
yes.
And so do we. And it's just part of what you and I do, what a brain balance does. So in that sense, our connectedness is hugely important, I think.
Well, this has been absolutely delightful talking with you. We've got one of our comments is, what a delightful guy you are because you get tickled like a child. So
I have the most fun that you can believe. I mean, I have so much fun. I get to see people. Oh, by the way, I get chocolate and candy and cards and books from all over the world. That's just
are you
secondary.
Hinting?
No. I'm saying that. I mean, how much fun could you have in getting up to go to work and you know you get to help people. You get to always see something new almost every single day. I mean, what better could I do with my time in my life? I mean, there's nothing I could do better. I could have a personal relationship besides that. I'll get there. But you know how that goes. You work so many hours a week, you don't have time for that. But right now, what I'm so excited about is that we can see and measure how a person can be connected to themselves and to others, how a person can be balanced. And so we can start making sense out of, if you will, and measure what you do. See, heretofore, you've just been able to claim great examples, and certainly you've been able to do clinical whatever, you know, to say, okay, my methodologies work in terms of bringing people to mastery. But now I can say, guess what? I can measure that. So we're getting to the place now where we're able to see and measure per person what you do. And so in time, what we're going to be able to say is, these people demonstrate these things, and they didn't do as well. But if we change this, would that do? Would if you change this or whatever, would they respond differently? You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be able to help you hone your mastery of counseling and teaching others how to master anger.
Mm-hmm.
This is so exciting.
Absolutely,
it's really
that's
exciting.
Really that's very wonderful. It gives us a possibility to feel like we actually know what we're doing and we can replicate it. Well, Lee Gerdes, I just believe I could talk with you forever. I have enjoyed this so much, and I want to thank you for all the work that you've done and for putting what you've done and what you've been thinking about into your book, Limitless You. And most of all, thank you for being on Full Power Living today.
Thank you, Eileen.
Be sure to join us next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time for my conversation with Richard Blackstone about his blueprint for manifesting. And thanks to our incredibly supportive and talented producers at Fresh Talk Media, Paul and Robin Johnston. Till next time, I'm your host, Eileen Dillon, thanking you for listening and reminding you to pay attention to what you want to become with a balanced brain, not to what you want to overcome.
You're listening listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.